This song put Queen Latifah on the map. After making her hip-hop debut in 1988, Dana Queen Latifah Owens has become so much more than rap's first major female star. Her talent and charisma have catapulted her into just about every area of entertainment, from books to television to movies. Here's Queen Latifah in her Oscar-nominated role as matron Mama Morton in the musical Chicago.
You know what, Mama? I always wanted to play Big Jim Colosimos. Do you think you can get me that?
Big Jim's?
Yeah.
Geez, I don't know. It's going to take another phone call.
How much is that going to cost?
Oh, come on, Val. How I feel about you? You're like family to me. You're like one of my own.
Yeah.
I'll do it for $50.
I recently had the chance to talk with a very open and very funny Queen Latifah. She started out by telling me how her first audience was her family.
I remember being able to do people's accents pretty good. And there was a commercial with Rula Lenska. And she'd go, "Hi, I'm Rula Lenska." My family, even my aunt Elaine, would always make me, "Do the commercial, do the commercial." And I'd do it. I was maybe 5, 6, 7. Not even sure how old I was.
You have taken such an interesting path. Part of it is the path of hip-hop. I can't say for sure that you didn't foresee all of this, but how do you think your life has played out in terms of how hip-hop has played out?
For me, hip-hop has just been the catalyst for everything. A form of expression, a way for me to kind of get my feelings out and, you know, release whatever's going on inside. Initially, it was poems and songs, and then it kind of became the spoken word through hip-hop. And, you know, it's just the energy that comes with the music, you know, being able to kind of get up and, you know, you could brag and boast at the same time. You can talk about political issues. You could talk about things going on in the world. You could talk about your pride as a woman and so many different things.
Because it's late. I break into a lyrical freestyle. Grab the mic, look at the crowd and see smiles. Because they see a woman standing up on her own too. Sloppy slouching is something I won't do. Some think that we can't flow. Stereotypes, they got to go. I'ma mess around and flip the scene into reverse.
With what?
With a little touch of ladies first.
Hip-hop music and culture is going everywhere I go, it goes with me. It's been to the Oscars and back.
Absolutely. I remember I lived in New York for 10 years, and I just remember that your voice was part of the soundscape of New York.
Nice.
Was there ever a moment where you got sprung on yourself, where you were like, wait, that's Queen Latifah?
I got a little souped up the first time I heard my record on the radio. I mean, that was exciting. I screamed it out the windows of my apartment, my second floor apartment. My record's on the radio, my record's on the radio. I was kind of going nuts, but I never lost my head. I never lost sense of who I was. I never got conceited, souped up, you know, big-headed, any of that stuff. Because, you know, it was exciting, but at the same time, there was a lot of work involved. And I had to deal fairly quickly with the loss of my anonymity. As soon as my first video came out, people started to recognize me. It was weird. It was disconcerting in a way. It was exciting in one way, but it was scary in another way because it was like, you know, I couldn't just be me, and I had to behave. I
mean, but it sounds like you found a way to be centered about it.
Well, I found a way to carve out my own little world, if you will, you know, to have my place where I feel comfortable. I don't have to be Queen Latifah 24 hours a day, and that would be around my friends and my family. And certain places I go where I know people know me and I can just be me. And I think that's important. You know, I think if you don't really have, a foundation, a base of people to, you know, who really care about you, and you come into any kind of entertainment business, it can be, you know, it can be kind of scary because people are going to tell you what you want to hear, and they're going to say, you know, tell you you're great, you're fantastic, you're wonderful, and you're the best, and all of that crap, basically, because you're never always the best, and you're never always wonderful, and you're never always great. You know, sometimes you're just good, you know, and sometimes you're not so good at all. And I think it's important to have people around you who can tell you those things in a caring way, because, you know, it's coming from someone who cares about you, not from someone who's just trying to tear you down. But I think it gives you a sense of of always knowing who you are and where you are. You know, when I go home, I'm just Dana. I'm just La. I'm Auntie Dana to my niece and my nephew. I'm a sister to my brother and sisters, and a daughter to my mom and dad, you know, and it's not Queen Latifah in the room.
Well, let me move on to your HBO project, Life Support. Now, you are portraying a woman, Anna Wallace, an AIDS activist living with HIV, based mm-hmm. on a real-life woman. Tell me how you got into this project and why. What was your motivation to get into the project?
You know, there was a few things that contributed to me deciding to do it. One, you know, was me meeting with Nelson and Nelson George and Shelby Stone, and hearing what they wanted to do with it and what it was about, and just hearing from Nelson's heart where it all came from. That was
and
one.
And he was the writer on this?
He was a writer and director. And this is his sister. He sort of mm-hmm. removed himself from it and kind of made it about the women. But, you know, it's loosely based on his family. And then it was HBO, too, because I know HBO just puts a lot into projects like this. So I felt like, okay, this is something that they'll push. It'll be seen. It's something that needs to be seen. It's something that needs to be talked about and needs to be humanized. And so it'd be a good project to get into. And then so we just kind of came on as producers.
So when you say we, Jamie Foxx also was a co-executive
yeah,
producer.
Yeah, Jamie's company actually had already been involved in it.
People in our age bracket roughly think of AIDS. You know, we weren't necessarily the first people to have it hit, but we are, I think, people who were in their late 30s or mid-30s mm-hmm. Have seen a lot of people pass.
And, I've lost two cousins to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Was that one of the reasons why you decided to make this happen?
Definitely. And, you know, part of the issue is that, you know, we're still losing people to it. We're still getting it at a totally unbalanced rate as African Americans. I mean, it just makes no sense that we are 50% of all new cases, yet 12% of the population, which means we definitely need more education. We need more information. We need to get tested. We need to do whatever we can to save our people. And our kids and women particularly are getting hit at a disparaging rate as well. So we just have to do more. And this story is a woman's story.
Yeah.
And it's also an African-American woman's story. So it was definitely important from that aspect to make it happen.
In the film, you had actual women who attended support groups featured in the film.
Be still. Be still. He was older. He looked nice. I asked him, he said no, and that was it. The condoms were sitting right there in a basket. They were sitting right there. All I had to do was pick it up and open it.
Me and Slick used to get high together, and then he got locked up, and he called me. He created this story about his friends in jail had gotten tested, you know, some of them, and they came up positive, and he thought that I should get tested. As soon as he said that, I knew it. I knew it, I knew it, I knew it. I was ready to kill his ass. I was ready to kill myself. I was ready to kill somebody.
What was it like to be completely real in scenes like that?
It was deep because most of the women who are sitting in that scene and discussing those support group scenes, you know, are actually from Life Force, which is the organization that Life Support is based on. So they're all pretty much HIV positive. Contracted it in many different ways. And the reality is, to hear their stories is to really get a true picture of it. Unfortunately, our government wants to, you know, make it a religious thing. You know, preach abstinence or we're not going to fund your organization. Yeah, we're lying. We're dying. We're losing people. It's not really about that. I think what we need to kind of look at it as is, you know, let's look at kids. Let's look at teenagers. Let's look at us. Okay, we are in that age group where we were some of the first adolescents to experience the AIDS crisis. You know, I think I was maybe 14 in 1984, you know, in freshman year of high school. Come on, that's like the age when all my emotions and all my sexuality was blooming and budding and driving me nuts. And everyone was attractive, and, you know, any boy could tell me he loved me, and I was ready. You know what I mean? Not quite ready. But, you know, mm-hmm. it really got through to my heart because I was young. I didn't know any better. And my emotions were, you know, everything I was experiencing was being experienced for the first time, you know. And that still happens to this day. It hasn't changed. what has changed is that we have diseases. I mean, first it was herpes, you know, that was the big thing. You can't get rid of it. And then it became HIV and AIDS. You can't get rid of it. And so for me, my whole sexual experience, my whole sexual life has been about using a condom. And I remember, like, one of my first boyfriends, you know, we dated for a really long time. We never had, you know, unprotected sex ever. And
well, that's because
it
wasn't
even a big
deal.
But
a lot of folks will do it. You know, I mean, just to be real, it's like, you know,
totally.
I feel the way that you feel, but a lot of people.
Well, in the heat of the moment, I mean, things happen. I mean, the things happen in the heat of the moment. And that's why, you know, it helps to have a something in your pocket in the heat of the moment. You never, you know, like you just can't take those chances. Whenever I've come close to that with anyone else and they just haven't had one on them, I'm kind of looking at them like, well, what did you think was going to happen here? Everything you're doing is trying to get me in this position, yet you don't have a condom? What did you think?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What were you thinking? We were just going to go for it? Like, and it kind of turned me off. You know, it really made me feel like here's somebody who doesn't care about me or themselves. You know, but that's just the way I think. I mean, I know a lot of people, we have these emotions that tell us we need it and we want it right now, and we need to feel this affection and this love and this attention and all this kind of stuff. And so you're always going to have new cases. I mean, I don't know what, you know, why people expect that everyone is going to make the right decision at all the time. It just doesn't happen.
A lot of people, it's not even that they think, oh, this couldn't happen to me, but they kind of think, well, it's a done deal already. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen, no matter what. And people have this kind of fatalistic attitude. Do you ever run into people who have that kind of attitude?
I did run into a lot of people who just did not see themselves as old people. Not that I do either, but I always imagine in my mind, I'm going to live to get old. Maybe it's because I had a cool grandma that was 94 when she passed a few years ago, who was spunky and energetic and funny and really the inspiration for Mama Morton. You know, like she was, I've always had people, you know, who made me want to get older, you know, who made it look okay. So like, you know, some of my friends, when they turned 30, they freaked out. You know, they thought life was over and they hadn't done this and they hadn't done that. I'm like, what are you whining about? Let's get it going. 30s have been the bomb. You know what I mean? All that stuff I had to figure out in the 20s is out of here. I've been cruising since I turned 30. It's been great. I think if my friends probably were to say anything about me, they'd say she's the one who would jump off the cliff in Jamaica. You know what I mean? She's the one that'll get on the motorcycle and ride hard, you know? She'll make us want to do it. To me, life is for living. You only get one, and every day is a gift to me.
The leaves are brown, and the sky is gray. I went for a
walk. Like recording artist, Oscar-nominated actress and platinum-selling recording artist Queen Latifah is the co-executive producer and star of the film Life Support. It premieres tomorrow night on HBO. And if you believe, as we do, that the AIDS crisis merits more attention, tune in or podcast our special report on Black teens and sex this coming Wednesday.
California dreaming on such a winter's day.